Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 37 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-by-episode guide to the final season of The Expanse on Amazon Prime. I'm Katie Burt.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
And we are here to talk about Season 6, Episode 2, Azure Dragon. This is the second episode of the final season, so we're moving too quickly, I think, to the end of The Expanse. But before we dive into our discussion of this episode, let us do our handy episode description. Chip, take it away.
Alrighty then. While soldiers on Laconia are up to something, the Rossi crew preps to track down the eponymous spotter ship, the Azure Dragon, when Bobby Draper joins and gives new orders from Christian. Capture instead of destroy. They barely catch the Azure Dragon, and Bobby disables it with an electromagnetic pulse, but plans change when Naomi has a panic attack over jumping from ship to ship. Clarissa takes Naomi's place and saves Bobby's life, earning Holden's respect. They also find a map of every stealth rock lined up for attacks on Earth, and more. Meanwhile, Christian pitches Monica Stewart on a new story, putting a human face on the death and destruction the belt has caused people on Earth and Mars. Kamina pitches an OPA malcontent on piracy against Marco's Free Navy. And speaking of the Father of the Year, he covers up Philip's murder of his friend while labeling Philip an embarrassment. When he learns that the Rossi's got the goods from the Azure Dragon, he's not super upset. The war's on the way to Ceres, and he thinks he's got it covered.
So we talked last week about how much less time this season has to tell a full story. And on top of telling a full season story, they also have to wrap up as much as they can, from the series as a whole. With that in mind, what did you think about the pacing and stakes of this episode? Does this feel big enough for the last season?
It didn't until they got on the Azure Dragon and then started running around in their spacesuits. And then you're like, oh, okay, this feels like the expanse of yore where they're getting stuff done. I mean, they kind of did this last time with Holden and that, well, I think it was the Azure Dragon still, but, or what was it? What was it he was investigating? That thing on the rock, the probe or whatever it was.
The engine.
So much has happened.
Yeah, the engine. Yes, exactly. But this one was more classic expanse, basically because Bobby's involved in the spacesuit. And whenever Bobby's in a mean-looking spacesuit, I'm there.
In a mean-looking spacesuit and calling Amos Pee-wee. Calling Amos Burton Pee-wee.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody else is going to on that show, it's going to be her. So.
I've got mixed feelings because, you know, The Expanse, its bread and butter, like you said, Warren, is all about, you know, sort of action adventure sci-fi. Mm-hmm. They do so much stuff with the show, though. The mystery stuff, the weird metaphysical proto-molecule stuff and all that stuff. There are only four more episodes till the series is done unless it gets some kind of reprieve down the road. Mm-hmm. And boarding a lightly crewed ship and shooting people in the head getting on a computer and pulling information, I mean, it's fun and all, but we're on the verge of ending up the series, you know? I really want big, weird stuff, you know?
I think that's coming. I think episode 6 is going to be lunacy. Or episode 5 will be lunacy, and episode 6 will be the mopping up said lunacy and then tying all the little strands together.
Yeah, I was surprised how quickly they captured that spotter ship. I thought that was going to take longer.
Well, also how quickly Bobby got to the Rossi. I think something the show has traditionally done really well is given the scope of the universe. They've been able to articulate the scope of the universe very well in using various tools. And one of those is just, you know, how long in terms of like even episode time it takes for characters to get to each other. And I'm not always sure where everyone is in relation to each other. Actually, if there's like a good map of the Expanse.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, let us know, listeners. That would be cool to see. But yeah, it does continue to feel different from other seasons, but I think like we all said last week, I am just excited to have more of this story.
I just wanted to point out there's one very good shot that where they're on the ship itself and they go like I think they're upside down. And then they rotate, I guess, 180 degrees to the other half of the crew doing their thing. And it's all one continuous shot. And I'm sure it's all CG because that'd be the easiest way to pull it off. By easy, I mean, you know, most useful to them way to pull it off. I'm sure it's not easy. But anyway, that's one shot that I just noticed going, wow, that's pretty stellar. They've had a few good ones in their day, but that's one of their better ones.
I'm used to, like you all said, I'm used to The Expanse being a bit slower. In terms of distances and geography, like Star Wars, Star Trek movies, like Star Trek VI, you know, you're from one end of the galaxy to the other in just a scene change. And that did kind of happen with Bobby. So I am feeling like this level of compression here that she's gone from talking to Christian somewhere in Earth orbit to boom, she's here on the Rossi. I'm grateful for that because I want her on the Rossi. The whole gang's back together again, except for the awful actor. So this is what I want. But yeah, I'm just sort of anxious. I'm not ready for the show to go, and I don't want it to let me down because they've only got six episodes to work with.
Yeah, you anxious, Chip?
Hey, that is a brick that can be thrown
all
around.
Sorry, yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is an anxious, anxious group.
Including myself.
It was cool to see Bobby come back into this group after, you know, a while away. I think lesser shows are often, you know, when you have characters who come together who aren't always together, if they're meant to be characters you like, they just make sure that they like each other and there's not a lot of tension necessarily. Mm-hmm. But something that The Expanse has always done really well is actually followed the like characterization of these people and, you know, followed that to like the inevitable like conflicts and tensions that would exist because of the people that they are. And, you know, we get this kind of clash when Bobby first comes on board and kind of just takes over to a certain extent, or tells, you know, Holden and the rest of the ship that their mission has changed. This is what they're doing. You know, Avasarala told her that this is what they're doing. Rossi is, in theory, an independent vessel. And yeah, I thought it was interesting to see that conversation play out, even if we kind of all knew where it was headed. How did you all feel about that?
Well, because she's also coming in and being like, you guys are kind of disposable on some level in a way that like the actual military isn't, you know, like she's real about like, oh, the optics of a SWAT team trying to take this ship are just not going to work. So you guys are at the center of the
story. Or maybe Holden is real. Is it Holden who points that out? And maybe it's true. Like someone says that and then Bobby's like, no, we want this mission to succeed. So I also kind of saw that as like, maybe that's true. But as we know, Bobby is not a good liar. And I feel like that's also maybe just like the most pessimistic view on the situation and on Christian, which makes sense for where the morale of the Rossi is right now.
Yeah.
It's interesting that we have seen, I mean, I guess probably partly because it's only six episodes, but we've seen very little of the military this season, like other than generals running in and saying, blah, 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 to Avasarala, and her saying, yeah, whatever, get out of here, like, and then swearing at them. But besides that, we haven't seen very much. And usually you see like Martians, you know, yelling at each other or some sort of conflict back and forth with the military or somebody just getting taken over or whatever. And, you know, I guess the Free Navy counts as a military. We've seen plenty of that. So,
I love the idea of, and I think it's been one all along, but the idea of the Rossi as a privateer and it just sort of being named right here. My understanding is that the Expanse books sort of got their beginning as a role-playing game campaign.
Yeah, they did.
And that, and the notion of the Rossi being an independent thing just really appeals to the teenage role-playing gamer in me. It's the sort of stuff that my friend group did, you know. We had to have our character, our characters were extensions of ourselves, and we had to believe ourselves to be more than just, you know, military. We're independent.
Well, it's just more fun, and it means less game-related nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like, I play sometimes Star Wars, the mm-hmm. RPG, and I always play the Bounty Hunter stuff because they're just more fun than having to go through strict Jedi protocols or strict Empire protocols, for that matter. Who cares? Let's just go and steal stuff, you know?
But yeah. at the same time, you're independent, but also... You're yeah. always super important.
Like, well, yeah. I mean, that's the what's the word? Conceit of a role playing game.
Yeah. Right?
You're the center of the universe because, well, there's five people playing, and that's that. So,
right, and so that sort of plays its way into the whole the great man thing that we've been talking about, whether Holden falls victim to that as a character here and there. And one good way to deflate that is for Bobby to traipse onto the ship and take charge.
Yeah, and they're all just so tired. Everyone on the Rossi is like, you know, maybe if they were in a different place, they might put up more of a fight. I mean, I don't know. It seems like they're okay with this at this point, but they're just so tired.
And with everybody...
Well, we can all relate.
And everybody was already on edge, you know, in the previous episode. You know, our core group on the Rossi, you know, they're not great, you know. Clarissa is an element of sandpaper on the crew. So for Bobby to come in, you know, it's not going to be all sunshine and roses, as you said. And, you know, it's not Worf coming onto the bridge of the Enterprise in first contact and just, you know, we need somebody on tactical. You know, it's not that. These are real people.
There was a moment that did make me really appreciate Holden, which is the part where Bobby... saying something about taking, she's in control, basically. She's calling the shots. And, you know, a different guy or different captain would definitely have, like, made that into some sort of power play. And he just kind of was like, went with it. And I mean, there's probably a conversation for them to have at some point, but I did appreciate that he was not like, I'm going to keep fighting this. Or,
His ego wasn't necessarily a huge component in that decision.
Exactly.
Yeah. It might have been interesting to see how that would have played out if Alex was still flying and whether Bobby and Holden might have come to more conflict there.
That was something that really stood out to me, that, you know, Bobby was obviously closest with Alex of all the people on the ship.
Well, fellow Martian, right?
Exactly. And we saw them continue to correspond, you know, after, you know, the Rossi was kind of on its own again and Bobby was back on Mars. So... yeah, that felt like a huge difference in, or a factor that really shifted how Bobby's reintegration into the Rossi crew went.
Sure. And an open question about whether this season is going to have enough time for Bobby to have a moment of missing Alex. I suspect between potential compression of the story here, and the fact that it's hard to miss Alex without thinking about Cass Anver, I think they're just going to move on.
I totally think they will. They might like throw something in at the very end. Who knows? But yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they already did their little tribute to him, right? So
So we talked about how the crew of the Rossi is having a hard time right now, but arguably the member who's having the worst time is Naomi. Who obviously has a lot of feelings about the fact that the belt is at war with Earth. But also still has PTSD from her very recent brush with death that ended with Alex dying. So, yeah. Are you guys worried about Naomi?
Yes, but also I'm glad the show went there because this seems to be... I can't believe I'm saying this, of recent development. Like, it used to drive me crazy on Star Trek Next Generation, let's say, where, you know, the only, and I think it's one of the only shows to actually even address this, where they took a show for him to go back to France and go, man, I feel really crappy because I was turned into a Borg. But that was the rare exception to that. Most of the time, he gets tortured by the Cardassians for two straight episodes, and you know, next week he's just going, oh, a space anomaly, how very interesting. Look into it, number one. I'm like, what? No, this would irreparably damage you. What the hell are you talking about? And he's been through through several of these. So I'm glad that they actually showed what this does to her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Totally. It's a real mess for her. That Bobby is supremely confident that she can take out all the Belters. Naomi has been tortured, and her child has been taken from her again by the Belt. So, you know, she's a person without a home, but she is still a Belter. All this is tough. And then add the PTSD on top of that, and that great conversation that she has with Holden afterward, where he asks if she's okay, and she's like, not right now, you know. So again, it's all 3D characters. All of these characters are in just beautiful three dimensions, and the moment when she freezes, and then Clarissa jumps into the thing, you know, that is a perfect point to shake up the dynamic of the characters a bit.
And this really leads to it's a big deal for Clarissa that she herself remarks upon, even though Amos doesn't seem to notice. You know, she mentions after her conversation with Holden, where he's chewing her out for making some decisions without checking in with him first, that it's the first time he's referred to her as part of the crew. How do we all feel about this? Do we think she is part of the crew or should be part of the crew?
Well, you go first.
Well, I feel like it goes back to, like, there's only so many episodes. And I've never been a huge fan of Clarissa. You know, I think they did some interesting things with her last season. But in the end, I'm just kind of like, I don't want to spend too much time on Clarissa getting integrated into the roster. Like, I think the things that are interesting about it are how it affects our main Rossi crew. And less about, like, you know, does Clarissa feel good that she's part of the team?
Yeah.
And that's more just because there's so few episodes. I think in a different, longer season, it could be.
I do have to say, independent of the character, the scene where she rages out and then barfs into her helmet is pretty great.
Oh, yeah. It really is. I actually kind of thought I maybe had missed something. And then I was like, oh, no. She just, like, you know, she takes her whatever pill mod thing, and then, you know, she goes 200%, and then it's too much, you know,
great. Yeah. She's like, also, barfing into your spacesuit could be lethal.
Oh, yeah. Like,
you know,
I feel like she is very definitely a second tier character. And it's a weird imbalance for her to be basically Amos's attaché. And brought in there. So you've got these three characters that are operating on a much higher level, the characters are familiar with each other in universe, and they're the stars of the show out of universe, and then there's Poochie.
Yes, that's what she's called, Poochie.
Yeah. is that why he calls her Peaches? Is this an in-joke for the writers?
I just find Peaches an annoying nickname. Yeah. So it is. When Holden started calling her that, I'm like, too, buddy.
When Holden called her that, I was like, excuse me?
Yeah. All that being said, though, you've got to have that moment of her earning her keep. Mm-hmm. And you know, and that key phrase there is Holden admonishes her. She should have checked in with him. She should have run it by him. And that's an invitation. You know, you're not just Amos's plus one. You're part of this. You're part of this now. We're willing to depend on you, but you have to be dependable. You know, that sort of thing. It is a weird path to redemption. She went from hating Holden to just having a moment of clarity, and saving him on Medina or wherever, and then And then everything since then has been an outgrowth of Amos deciding to take her on as a project. It's very weird. It puts her off to the side, and it takes something like this to give her any chance of parity or even agency in the storyline.
Yeah, you mentioned, Chip, that Clarissa is more of a secondary character. But one of the big shifts in this season, and to a certain extent last season, I think, has been the position of Marco and Philip as primary characters. And they've gotten a lot of space this season, and they got a lot of space this episode. How are we all feeling about how that storyline is developing? It's so sad.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Marco's... He's edging toward Skeletor levels here. He's edging toward General Hux, you know? He's edging towards a comically over-the-top dictatorial villain.
Including, have you noticed his guyliner is getting more intense with each episode?
I love his guyliner. I also do love that someone in the show commented on his hair this episode. I thought it'd be Warren.
Yes. Oh, God. More tech bro criminality.
Man. Yeah. He's, you know, it's, I'm having trouble making words because, you know, Marco is basically toxic masculinity personified. Maybe one of the reasons
bad
that
dad.
Maybe one of the reasons that The Expanse is only going for six seasons is that Jeff Bezos had a wait, what's going on here moment, and realized that the tech bro might be hitting a little too close to home. I don't know.
I don't know if he's picking up on the themes of the show.
No, he strikes me as somebody who picks up on obvious things like that. Although he'll probably will pick up on, maybe I should bombard the Earth with asteroids. Yeah.
Oh, God.
But he's the kind of bad guy who, if one of his underlings gives him lip, ordinarily he's going to space them or move them off to a crap job, the way that he sends the pirate Walker in this episode, you know. So when this other character, Rosenfeld, when she has the let's just out of the blue, let's talk to you about your fathering skills and your responsibilities to the Free Navy and all that. Again, compression, but Marco is turning into the villain that I really want to see beaten. I'm finding Philip's complexity more interesting.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know. I think we've had more interesting villains before, you know. Murtry's character, you know, Murtry was irredeemable and nasty, but you know, you had Bern Gorman's charisma behind it. Aaron Wright, he was manipulative politician, but within believable parameters.
Even Marco last season was more, because now he's A, bored because he's being a governor and not a warrior, which I'm sure is going to change at some point. And B, yeah, he's just kind of becoming a little bit more of a cartoon this season than he was last season. You didn't know as much about the guy, right? So, which is good.
Yeah. I do like Marco as a character. Like, not I like him, but I think he's an interesting character. But I do think a lot of his scenes have felt really redundant this season so far, which is maybe partially intentional. You know, by the end of this episode, he seems very excited that they've actually lost a very key asset in this war that will mean that they are at more of a disadvantage than they were before. But he seems okay with it because he just seems excited to, like, not be in this, like, same holding pattern. I think he just wants to, like, kill people.
It's super creepy that he's not more concerned about the loss of that ship. It is very chilling that I'm like, I don't know what is going through his mind as a military strategist, but it can't be good. Like, well, it cannot, like, be good for anyone.
Well, Well, I mean, we're seeing it in American politics all the time these mm-hmm. days. You know, the most important thing is the fight, not the mm-hmm. not what you're trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. but the fight.
Yeah, and I think there's a part where Drummer's talking about Marco, and she says, I can't remember if it's her or that one guy she's trying to convert to her side. But she says, they're talking about how he's very good at converting followers. Mm. And I think previous seasons, you do see him give these, you know, really great speeches. And now he doesn't have to do that because he already has all these people following him.
And he also has power.
There's less moments for you to be like, eh, this guy's, you know, tactics I might have problems with, but he feels mm-hmm. much more like, you know, a misguided freedom fighter. And now he just seems like a jerk and a
revolutionary. They get in power and they suck.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, wow, you took this and now are just kind of being cruel and maybe not a good leader. Mm-mm. You know, like
That's what always happens with revolutions. People mm-hmm. are like, yeah, let's do this. And then somebody gets in, they're terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
It's very realistic.
Yeah. You have a plan for getting power and not mm-hmm. necessarily for what mm-hmm. to do with it when you have
it. Yeah. We have a certain example of that in 2016.
Yeah.
What?
So going back to Rosenfeld real quick, you know, yeah. she admonishes him to, you know, interrogate his feelings about Philip. And then her solution is forget about Philip and just focus on the bloody war, which is, you know, again, father of the year, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good dad
right
there.
So that's in Roosevelt's interests anyway. Poor Philip, you know, I don't know which way he's going to go at this point, but
just want Philip to get out. I don't mm-hmm. know if that's realistic for his character, but I just want him to like board a ship somehow and get out of there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he flails.
I think part of Philip wants that too, but not enough.
Yeah, he doesn't want it enough. You know, he's flailing around. You know, he feels guilty about shooting his friend. He suggests that some compensation be sent to his friend's family. But when he records the message, you know, he starts and he is just emotionally all over the place. And then he does it again and he basically does the party line, you know. And that's a lot of control over what he's saying. We still don't know exactly what he's feeling and what he's going to do with those feelings. And we've only got 4 episodes to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He seems like, yeah, your mention of toxic masculinity, Chip, it just feels like Philip is just so unable to both access and like process and regulate his emotions. And that scene of him recording the message to his friend's mm-hmm. family is such a good example of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's tough to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as a reward for suffering, not, you know, it's a good storyline, but suffering through Philip's storyline, we get a Drummer storyline in this episode. I thought this might be another kind of sad one for her as well, because we're seeing her, you know, offload one of her crew members / family members.
She's been dealing with all kinds of attrition, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really whittled down this crew.
But, like, this is a surprisingly fun, I think, episode for Drummer. We get to see her at work kind of, you know, lightly interrogating this other belter and, you know, trying to get a lay of the land. She's so good at what she does. And we get an Ashford reference, which I'm always looking out for. How did everyone else feel about Drummer's stuff in this episode?
I'm always there for Drummer content, basically, mm-hmm. no matter what she's up to. Mm-hmm.
And this is possibly the path to her being the happiest she's ever been, you know, an honest-to-God pirate, you know, with a pirate band. You know, she's been running for her life, trying to make a living for the people under her care, up until the point that Marco tracked her down and forced her into compliance and all that. But way happier than running Medina Station.
Oh yeah.
Totally. She did not enjoy that.
No.
And this is probably not a new observation, but between her and Ava Sorella, the throat lozenge budget in this film TV show must be through the roof, because I just hear her talking. I'm like, oh, it's gotta hurt. Like, yeah. On an 8-hour day or however long this is, her throat's just gotta be raw by the end of it.
I know. Oh man.
Yeah, so it's at the end of this episode, we've got Earth and Mars having picked all of the brain cells out of the Azure Dragon, figuring out where all the rocks are and other Belter secrets, and we've got Drummer starting to rally some folks to her position to start on Marco's supply lines and things like that. I mean, this could be a whole lot of fun, and I keep, you know. Might as well make a macro of me just repeating the phrase, and we've only got 4 episodes to go. All of this stuff needs to be converging at some point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's The Expanse always keeps me guessing, because I think I should have more of an idea, or I normally would have more of an idea of how some of these things are going to work out. Mm. But the fact that Christian spends this episode just trying to convince or at least like the end of the episode, trying to convince Monica to put more of a human face on the, you know, people, the victims of the war, the Earth are victims of the war. You know, that is super important, but
yeah,
it's not immediately obvious how that is going to tie in with some of these larger arcs.
Well, even the Drummer stuff, you know, the guy from the other ship who I don't know, I never learned his name, but you know, they say he's from like some splinter of the Golden Bough or whatever. And I feel like there are other seasons where they might have actually got into these different factions of Belter, whether that's like, you know, Golden Bough and whatever, or Dawes and Fred Johnson and like that. And it seems like
R.I.P.
Yeah, definitely. But poured one out for Fred.
See you never, Jared does. Harris.
Yeah, Jared Harris.
Just kidding. See you on the other show.
Yeah. Shows. So yeah, he's doing well. But yeah, it doesn't feel. They're trying to set up some sort of Belter counterbalance to Marco, but I don't know whether that's gonna actually, how much that can be in fruition, and how much of it is this like.
Yeah.
Pirate ship crew on the outskirts kind of picking off his supplies. Seems really unclear.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's fine as long as the last 2 episodes are 3 hours long.
That's fair. That seems reasonable to me.
Anything's possible on Amazon Prime.
It's true.
So in addition to all of these major moves that our main recurring characters are making, we also have another snippet of what's going on Laconia. What do you guys think about this?
I feel like I'm at such a disadvantage, as are we all, because we haven't read the books.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, this seems like it's leading up to something, but who knows what?
No,
it better be next episode.
I mean,
because we got to get this going.
I have seen phrases on the internet and on the wikis. You know, the word Laconia has special meaning going forward. I get that, and I understand that. But again, what's the payoff for this season? I don't know. I'm intrigued that we got this little bit about the strange dog at the beginning of the previous episode.
What is the significance of this weird salamander dog thing? What's going on?
I guess we're going to find out.
I suppose, yeah.
But, the settlers who don't wear a lot of traditional Belter tattoos or anything else like that, or you know, I really don't know where they're coming from. So I guess surely we're going to find out some more in the next episode or two. But the I do find it interesting, all this stuff about the settlers and the ecology sort of not being, not working for each other, you know. You know, the bird killed by the human food. It's probably not a good sign for the giant salamander dog that it runs off with the dead bird that had been poisoned by human food in the first place, you know.
And the adults are having a meeting. That could be about
And the adults are having a meeting. So we've
that
seen...
seems to be a pretty important one,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, and they are concerned. So we've seen the proto-molecule-y thing being built up in the sky. You know, it's all big and meaningful.
I hope you're enjoying this, readers. Yeah. Listening to us scramble around in the dark.
Look at those idiots. What are they doing?
Okay, so, this show, The Expanse is 100 million times better than the show I'm about to mention. But I did get some Terra Nova vibes from this.
I don't know if any of you watched. Your statement is correct.
Watched Terra Nova. It was so bad, and I watched all of it. I don't know why. but this reminded me of Terra Nova. But again, 100 million times better, which is impressive considering it's just like a little prologue snippet of an episode.
Which, speaking of 100 million times better, we watched a behind-the-scenes featurette where they're showing the set for Laconia. And wow.
It's very nice.
Incredible what they actually, like, the water actually moves, like, it's like 200 trees. I was just like,
I follow the cinematographer, Jeremy Benning is his name. He wasn't the cinematographer this episode, but he's like, I think they're kind of like their head guy for cinematography. He's like a Torontonian, so I just ended up stumbling across his Instagram. It's always full of cool Expanse stuff.
Yeah.
And references to kids shows that he and I remember because we're about the same age.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that there's going to be a lot more of this based on how much money they spent on the set. But also when you mentioned earlier that there isn't as much weird stuff maybe in this season so far. And it feels...
There's going to be protomolecule stuff. There has to be. I mean, there's that weird red whatever it is, which presumably more protomolecule.
And it feels like there's a lot of potential for weird stuff to happen on Laconia.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Which, it would be sad if we didn't get some weird stuff in this final season.
Yeah, it wouldn't feel like the same show.
Thank you so much for joining us on A Legitimate Salvage. Please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter and find us on the Incomparable Network. We'll be back soon to discuss Season 6, Episode 3, Force Projection. Until then...
Are you really all right? Or not ready to talk about it all right?